All right, so today I'm going to be presenting some of my work with working with John King and the Tree Ecophysiology Group at NC State University in the Forestry Department. And so for the past year or so, we've been looking at soil carbon pools and carbon cycling and microbial ecology comparisons between drained and undrained coastal wetland forested wetlands in North Carolina. So just some general background that a lot of us are probably familiar with. We know that wetlands store a large amount of carbon, even though they only make up a small percentage of the total land area. They can make up for upwards of 20% of the total carbon stocks. And so a figure, like many tables or figures we see, show this. So Lau 2005 has found this in his summaries. In the southeast, along the Atlantic coastal plain, we see in this region where we find most of these, of course, these coastal wetlands, we see a high amount of carbon storage. And so here in North Carolina, I guess we can't point, is where I'm focusing my work for this presentation. So the soil stored in the carbon stored in the soil is due to the formation of these thick organic horizons. This is primarily a function of the saturated conditions. So this is a figure of water table depth from the Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge, which is our undrained site in coastal North Carolina, just showing that we have these seasonally saturated conditions and periodic less saturated or unsaturated conditions throughout the season. Further mediating, though, that effect within these forests, we have this hummock hollow microtopography. So we have these high and low spots that really sort of segregate the system and the tree growth and what we speculate are the effects of that on the hydrology and therefore the aerobic and anaerobic processes that microbes carry out to influence methane and CO2 fluxes and things of that nature. So specifically today we're looking at a drained wetland site that's about 30 miles west of the undrained site that's the now pine plantation. And so when you drain a wetland site, you draw down the water table, disrupting the hydrology. This leads to typically an increase in decomposition as the soils become aerated. And as we've mentioned, this is this carbon in the peat or the organic horizons preserved through these flooded conditions. And so here what we're seeing is a figure from some data I've collected at the wetland site. From the gray circles are from the hollows, so there's wetter the lower positions, and the black circles are from the hummocks. And so as we increase water condition or soil water content, we decrease the activity of a lignin degrading enzyme phenoxidase. And so if we follow that curve back up where we're decreasing the water content, we might expect that these kind of enzymes and this activity level is going to increase, therefore driving loss of carbon from those soils. So the major objective was just quantify these differences in carbon storage and microbial ecology, microbial activity. Today I'll just be presenting microbial biomass data and to look at these differences between the drained and undrained site. So again, the field sites are located here in North Carolina in this southeastern coastal plain region. To the red star to the far right is Alligator River National Wildlife Refuge, and so that's the undrained wetland site. And then west from that, the other star is the drain site that's now a pine plantation. Just to look at these sites a little more, since we are, you know, that's sort of the main basis of this work. Both sites in that top right picture are outfitted with eddy flux towers, so they're part of this AmeriFlux core sites. This wetland type is a swamp peatland. They're deep organic soils, nutrient poor, acidic. Both sites you'll see are histosols. And again, they have this deep peat layer, but it can range with the mineral soils coming up closer to the surface in some areas. Specifically important for the wetland site and the location of the tower, and where I'll be presenting the carbon data from there, is around the tower where a mineral lens comes quite close to the surface and allowed, you know, the engineers to put up this tower stably, you know, in a stable fashion. It's also, you know, it's a pretty ecologically, I think, important ecosystem. It has a lot of wildlife aspects. It's the home of the red wolf introductions in the southeast. Atlantic white cedar restoration projects, some of the larger black bear populations on the East Coast. So a lot of other interesting reasons to try and understand these systems. The drained wetland, so Weyerhaeuser land, so some of you might be familiar with the Parker Tract area. Again, this is a histosol, so it's still fairly wet. On the bottom left, the picture is just one of the main drainage ditches around this site, and you can sort of see that it's pretty full, and that's typical. Also, on the bottom right, actually, is pictures of sphagnum moss that's growing on the forest floor throughout the pine plantation. And so another important note here is that this was drained, you know, around 100 years ago, and so this is a fourth rotation of loblolly pine, and the current plantation is 24 years old. And this is a bedded site. And so some of the work today, I'm just going to show comparisons of the site, but we did sampling by bed and interbed and hummock and hollow to try and get an idea of this microtopography effect as well. So soil sampling was done January, February of this year. We divided it up into these various diagnostic horizons that we've heard about today. The number in parentheses is just the average depth of that horizon from what I sampled. Just a note, the OA I'm going to present, we've divided into OA1, OA2, OA3, and really trying to get an idea of this, the functionality, I guess, of this layer, where the OA1 was a more heavily rooted zone, the OA3 being the 3 centimeters before the A horizon, and then everything in between we called the OA2. So in the wetland, just to point out, we did scrape the litter off the top of both sites with a 25 by 25 centimeter PVC square. And the wetland's a little more challenging. We had to go around and cut basically this OE, this monolith out containing 40% by volume roots, and cut that out with the saw. And then below that, you have this space that's occupied by large roots from these various hardwoods. And so again, cut that out. And then we used the Macaulay or peat auger to get those samples. In the pine plantation on the right, just used a 5 centimeter PVC core and pounded that in and then opened it back up. So from this, we've removed roots and large organic matter. I've kept the roots and done different analysis. I won't present that today. In the laboratory on the fresh soil, we did microbial biomass extractions and with potassium sulfate, then took these extractions and dried them back down to allow us to analyze the ground powder for carbon concentrations and isotope C13. As well with the soils, we dried those and sieved and ground those and ran those on the isotopic analyzer. So to jump into some of the conclusions, on the top axis, we'll see the variable we measured, the carbon pool. On the y-axis, the different soil horizons going from the surface to the deeper horizons. And so, for instance, for the carbon concentration here, we see a nice decrease with depth or decrease with horizon. So that was a good indication that we've really started to separate, in the field we've separated these horizons fairly well. And overall, you see in the litter, to note, the undrained sites are the blue circle, the drained sites are the yellow, and the statistical comparisons are just at each level between the drained and undrained, and the star being p less than 0.05 and the cross p less than 0.1. And so in the upper, the litter and the OE, and then we see greater carbon concentration in the undrained site, and then as we move down to the mineral soil, we as well see greater concentration in the mineral soil of the undrained site. When we look at microbial biomass pools, we see a similar but quicker decrease with depth of the microbial biomass pool. And in this litter layer especially, we see a highly significant greater amount of microbial biomass in the litter of the drain site, as well as in the OA2, and the inset just blows up those last couple horizons, so we can sort of see the differences. And then down in the A, B, and B, we do tend to have a little bit higher microbial biomass in the undrained site, primarily as a function of there being more carbon down there. So when we look at the carbon stocks or carbon density, we got bulk density estimates from these sites, which we did our best to get good estimates, especially in the wetland site. It can be challenging, but what we're seeing here is fairly similar surface horizon carbon stocks in the undrained and drain site. But then when you get down to this OA2, you have this huge, you know, three to almost four times the amount carbon in that OA2 horizon. And then as well as the OA3, we have the increase. And so what this, when we sum this up for the top 50 centimeters, basically what we see is that we have a lot more carbon in the drain site. And so before we all drain the East Coast to triple our carbon, I think what I view this as, and my guess, is that it has to do with the sampling regime of each site as well as previous peat depth of our pine plantation. And so a sort of back of the envelope calculation, if you look at the carbon stocks from Alligator River from the wetland and compare that to the peat depth and then take your carbon stock from the pine plantation and plug that in as your X value to see, well, what would the peat depth correlate to if we can, you know, slightly trust this equation. We see that at least based on this, again, rough sort of estimate, the undrained site, we measured that, was around 44 centimeters depth of peat. And based on this calculation, we would estimate that maybe before drainage, the pine plantation had something more like 70 to 80 centimeters of peat. And so I wouldn't hang my hat on these actual numbers, but I do think that what is likely happening first off is we've sampled around the tower at the wetland where we have this mineral lens. And as you move away from that, you get very deep peat horizons, meters deep. And we've had 15 foot augers down in the soil. Unfortunately, I can't find the picture anymore, but so I think one thing, again, as you move away from the tower at the wetland site, you get much deeper peat layers, and I think that would drastically increase our estimates from the wetland site. I also think, and looking around at some other papers, I think there are potential implications of 100 years of productive forestry on this site, so as opposed to maybe completely draining a site and 5 years later looking at it, depending on your future land use. And so what are the effects of, you know, this buildup of this forest floor and these rooting, you know, enhanced rooting and things from a productive forest site. So look at the C13 values. This is where stuff that I get really excited about, but as you see in the litter layer and the OE layer, similar C13 values between the drained and undrained site, basically the same. And starting at the OA1 and the undrained site, it pretty much flatlines all the way down to the B. And we did say, I mean, this was down to 80 or so centimeters in the wetland site. And so we just see this uniform C13 value of the carbon to depth in the undrained site. And then as sort of expected, maybe as you move out in the drain site and get deeper and deeper in the organics, they are being more processed. And if you saw the picture, you know, noticed on the profile pictures, I mean, it looks more typical, at least, of your northeastern kind of O horizon and the darker OA, whereas the OA in the wetland is brown, more brown, and seems to indicate more, you know, litter kind of carbon. And so this is a pretty, to me, pretty interesting result. The microbial biomass C13, similarly in the litter, we have the same similar C13 values in microbial biomass, but that quickly diverges in the OE and OA, where basically in the undrained site we have a depletion of the C13 of microbial biomass, and in the drain site we have an enrichment, I guess, compared to themselves. And then when you get down, start going back down to the mineral soil where, you know, again, the drain site is still pretty wet, you're having a convergence on that. And so just sort of, again, some just food for thought. When you look at this figure, for instance, comparing the C13 value of carbon compounds extracted from a leaf compared to the bulk leaf, we tend to see that more labile compounds are enriched compared to a bulk leaf, and things like lignin and lipids tend to be depleted. And so if we put some lines on this graph, again, you know, just to think about what this means, the litter line, the dotted line, is actually about where we measured the C13 of the litter. The shift towards the depleted nature of the lignin compared to our litter, assuming that this holds up for our data. I just think this gives us an idea that, you know, what the microbes are decomposing in the wetland site is something that's potentially more, you know, more of a lignin or more recalcitrant nature compared to the drain site. So just to go through this, so I don't about out of time. For conclusions, I think estimating the drainage effects on carbon depth is completely dependent on an understanding of the previous depth of that, you know, of the peat from that site. We saw a more homogeneous and unchanging carbon pool based on the C13 values in the undrained wetland site. The C13 values from the drain site indicate more processing of that organic carbon. And I would, guess that the C13 of the microbial biomass is indicating a different carbon source that they're breaking down. And so some ongoing work, my title said activity, microbial activity. I didn't finish the enzyme analysis, but we're looking at enzymes in the high spots and low spots and between sites. I think we need better estimates of the peat depth at the wetland site as well as around the pine plantations. There are some pockets of wetlands even on that site. I think it would be interesting to get a good characterization of the type of carbon compounds in these different sites. And then future work, we're going to be looking at seasonal fluxes of greenhouse gases coupled with microbial community structure and functional analysis, try and get a idea of that. So I guess that's it.
Okay, do we have one question? Yep.
Are you implying that the Alligator River site and the Parker track at one time were equivalent?
No.
Are you aware that the Parker track was the subject of litigation and massive research about forest management and hydrology and drainage and injury?
I've heard some about that. I don't know how the specifics about that. And so part of it is, these are the sites that we have and where the towers are, and that's where the work's being done. But no, I wouldn't say this is the same as complete comparison, but it, they're within the, a regional area of wetlands. So, but yeah, I agree. They aren't the exact same site, and there is not a pine plantation sitting right by Alligator River.
Thank you.